Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is a special edition of Charlotte Talks, Path Toward Healing, Building Equity in Charlotte's Healthcare Community. I'm Mike Collins. The pandemic uncovered alarming inequities in many different areas of modern American society. We knew they were there prior to the pandemic, but COVID laid them bare for all to see. Among the more troubling inequities were found, ironically, in the healthcare arena, just when people needed healthcare the most. For the past several months on this program and elsewhere on WFAE, we've been exploring the price we pay for healthcare and for pharmaceuticals. Here's the short version of what we've learned. We pay far more than those in other developed countries, far more, while our outcomes are worse. We know poorer health leads to shorter life expectancy, and we know that can often be predicted by the zip code in which you live. Social determinants like housing stability, education, and income correlate with health and lead to disparities. It is in all of our best interests to address this because poorer health outcomes cost us all. So, how do we close the gap? This hour, we are in the atrium of one independent center, that's Northeastern University's Charlotte home. We're joining with them to explore options and pathways toward building equity in health care. And joining us is Carl Reed. He's the Senior Vice Provost and Chief Inclusion Officer at Northeastern University. Thanks for being here, from flying down from Boston. Thank you, Mike. Good to see you. Tanya Blackman is Executive Vice President and Chief Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity Officer with Novant Health. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Gibby Harris is the Public Health Director for Mecklenburg County. Good to see you again as well.
It's good to see you, Mike.
Let me start with you, Carl. This conversation was created by Northeastern University. And for listeners who may not know, Northeastern's based in Boston. You have a kind of a global reach with campuses in San Francisco and Toronto and London and obviously Charlotte and elsewhere. The Charlotte campus was created in 2011 as your expansion site. Why is the topic of building equity in healthcare important to Northeast? And is this conversation at Northeast Charlotte-centric normally, or are you having this conversation all over your campuses?
Yes, and once again, thank you for having us, and thank you for this opportunity to speak and to have meaningful conversations about something that is so intractable, but solvable as well, and in particular, health equities and health inequities as well. So just a quick note, yes, Northeastern is a global university. We are on 11 campuses in three countries, in London and in Canada as well. And we're having conversations worldwide about these matters. Dean Shepard, Carmen Shepard, started the conversation today when she said our desire is to improve the health and well-being of all people. And we believe that you just can't do that without having a representative healthcare professional workforce. The workforce should look like the communities that it serves. There are a couple of reasons why that is the case. One, it builds trust with the community. And we know that historically there is a lack of trust with the healthcare profession and communities of color for a variety of reasons, systemic inequities, unfortunate ways in which those communities have been served from the Tuskegee experiment on. And so building trust is key. It creates access and opportunity, but also it produces opportunities for meaningful interactions that occur within the healthcare professional. It mitigates biases that play out as well. So We believe that creating a healthcare workforce that looks like the communities is essential, and that's really what we've been doing for the last 10 years here.
Tanya, both hospital systems in Charlotte are working toward this end. They see addressing inequities in healthcare as important. I want to hear from you as to how Novant defines what we're talking about tonight. How do you define inequities?
Thank you, Mike. Health equity, and it sounds like a big term, but really for us, it's the attainment of the highest level of health for all people. And to achieve that, you have to, one, think about and honor each person as a human being and having the right to health care and the right to wellness. You also have to have community partnerships. You have to have dedication and a commitment to access to care, to deliver compassionate care, culturally and linguistic care, that you want a team that represents the communities that you serve. So all of those things help us to achieve health equity.
And how are we doing so far? I know this is probably a recent development of both hospital systems to address this, because we've gone through a change in attitude nationwide about this. I think as a result of George Floyd and the pandemic, we've really come to see things that we perhaps turned a blind eye to in the past. How are we doing?
I think we're making progress. And I think the important part is to not focus on perfection, but that we're making progress. The other piece is that it takes a long-term intentional commitment. So when you think you're there, you've arrived, you're not. Mm-hmm. You have to continuously work on achieving health equity.
Gibby Harris, you've been in the healthcare field for a very long time. I think one thing you've said is that equity is different than equality. What's the distinction, and why is that distinction important?
Equity really speaks to the ability of everyone to access what they need and to get it in a way that they can attain it. Equality is more about making sure that there's access out there. Just because there's access out there doesn't mean that people can access that service. So when we look at the issue of equity, we're looking at health from the public health perspective. We're looking at healthcare, but we're also looking at broader issues in the community. For public health, the community is our patient. We do see individual patients in some services, but a lot of what we're doing is focusing on the bigger issues in our community, the disparities that we're seeing in our community, and how do we address those. And if we don't address the structural issues and the policies that have been developed over many years, we may have equality, but we're not going to have equity.
And I want to get something, an expansion on something you said, Carl. You said that health equality would be where everyone gets the same care, but that health equity means that resources are deployed to get everyone to the desired outcome. That sounds infinitely more difficult, is it?
It starts with the individual and understands what their needs are and meets the needs accordingly, rather than starting with the healthcare professional or the institution and saying, this is what you need. Just asking the question, starting really, great teachers, for example, are teachers who meet the needs of the student first and then bring content to that student need. So one of the individuals that I really respect, Dominic Rollins, says, equality is giving everyone the same size shoe. Equity is making sure that they have the appropriate shoe size.
And I said, Gibby, at the very beginning, since you're in public health, I want to ask this to you, because I said at the very beginning that we should all be concerned about this, because this costs all of us. There is a societal and an economic cost to all of us from this. So do we have any way of knowing what the cost of inequity is?
I don't think we have a specific cost, but what we know is that many of the people who are seeking care for chronic conditions, the issues that we're seeing with pregnancies and pregnancy outcomes, all of those things are related to the inequities that we see these days. People don't have the right size shoe. And a lot of that is because of this, as I mentioned, the systems that we have set up. We have issues with education. We have issues with housing. We have issues with jobs. We have poverty in our community. And as long as we have those things, it's going to be hard for us to be able to address the issues in an equitable way.
And one of the things that's pretty interesting to find that even if you control for those factors, socioeconomics, housing, education, equity, inequity still exists among people of color versus other groups. And so there's something a little more kind of institutional that must be addressed here.
Yep.
So even if you kind of compare groups that have equal education, equal housing, equal income, et cetera, there are still higher levels of infant mortality and birth, et cetera, in those communities of color. Right. And so there's something more difficult that one has to address.
Tanya.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, you mentioned that equity is harder, and it is. Mm-hmm. And it's because we really have to look at structures and policies and procedures, things that systemically have been put in place that either intentionally or unintentionally advantage some and disadvantage others. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we have to look at our own unspoken biases. We have to look at things that we've put in place in our organizations, in the community, and be willing to unravel that.
When you're talking about things that we put in place historically, we're talking about things that led to redlining and neighborhoods being walled off and food deserts being created because of economic situations. Through no fault of the people living there, they just can't get out of the hole that we dug for them. Is that essentially what you're talking
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
And we have learned over the course of this series that we've done on this station, on WFAE, the price we pay for healthcare, that many of the problems in healthcare are due to lack of access. Worse outcomes come from that. Shorter life expectancies come from that. That's related to income and housing instability and neighborhood instability and opportunities that don't exist in some of those neighborhoods for some of those people, all of which is connected to systemic racism and structural inequities, which have been with us for decades, perhaps for centuries. So these are deep-seated and difficult to untangle. Carl Reed, where do you start?
Well, the good news is that we are, you know, Simon Sinek calls it the infinite game, right? There's no winners and losers. The goal of the game is to continue to make progress, as Tanya mentioned earlier. We have to make progress. So the first step is to listen to the community, to understand the need. We don't know fully what is going on in the communities that are most disaffected. And so spending time building relationships, understanding the needs, and then building solutions, co-creating solutions with those communities is essential as a first step in this process.
But the health department, it seems to me, would know the need, wouldn't they? I mean, you're the frontline medical provider for a lot of folks who don't have primary care physicians, are you not?
We are. And, you know, what I will say is that we've spent years, public health, healthcare, whoever it is, we've spent years doing things for the community or to the community because we think that's what they need and what they want. But we have to take the time, and it takes time, to listen to the community, to have conversations with them, and let them help us develop the solutions that are going to make a difference.
I want to come back to that, and I want to find out from both you, Gibby Harris, and you, Tanya Blackman, about some of the things that might be going on right now, either at the health department, elsewhere in the community, or at Novant. As we continue our conversation from Northeastern University, we're in the atrium of one independent center with a live audience. We can hear you now. You can. There we go. We're coming right back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about health care and building equity in Charlotte's health care community, a project, a joint project with us and with Northeastern University, which is where we are right now in the atrium of One Independent Center, Northeastern's Charlotte campus, with Carl Reed, the Senior Vice Provost and Chief Inclusion Officer for Northeastern. Also, Tanya Blackman, Executive Vice President for Chief Diversity, Inclusion, and Equity at Novant Health, and Gibby Harris, who's in charge of Mecklenburg County's Public Health Department. So what's going on right now? Can either of you, Gibby or Tanya, share some things that are happening right now, either at Novant or at the Health Department or elsewhere in the community, to address some of these inequity issues? Tanya.
I'll start.
I'll let you start.
One of the things we talked about listening is that Novant Health has done a listening tour. And we did a listening tour in our system, as well as in the community, to understand what the community's needs were. I actually started that. I'd been with Novant Health for over 20 years, but didn't know exactly where we stood about diversity, inclusion, and equity, and health equity. And so from that listening tour, we developed a strategic plan. Part of that was to work with our internal team to make sure that they were culturally and linguistically competent. That included our physicians and our nurses and everyone that touches our patients.
Give me an example of what that means.
What that means is that we have educational sessions where team members learn about themselves, what they feel about diversity, inclusion, people biases, biases that they may not know. The physicians do the same thing. They go through education on culturally competent care as well as unconscious bias.
And Gibby, I know that every four, you could jump in and give me some examples as well, but I know that every 4 years your department conducts a community health assessment to see what the important health concerns or issues are here and to address them. You can talk about that, and you can maybe give us some historical perspective. Have those issues changed in any substantial way over the years?
They go up and down. What I will say is typically we have four priority areas that come out of the community health assessment every time it's done. What those priorities are haven't changed. They're similar every 4 years. So that means we haven't addressed these things to the extent that we need to address them.
What are they? What are some of the things that keep cropping up?
So mental health services is a big one. That one, access to care always rises to the top. Chronic diseases, and quite often the issue of maternal outcomes is one that we see as well. But this past time, violence prevention came out in one of the top four. So one of the things we're doing is we've created an Office of Violence Prevention in the Health Department. The main role of that office is to facilitate things in the community to help us move things along and try to improve things, but also to engage the community and ask them what their issues and needs are. So we've been using data to show where the issues are in the community, and we are having conversations in the community at all different levels. I mean, we know that the bigger issues are in 18 to 24-year-olds, so we're talking to that group to get input from them. We're having conversations in the jail. We're having conversations with community partners. And we're focusing on a number of different things. But out of this will come a strategic plan for the community. We've got lots of partners that are engaged and involved in this.
So as we've done shows on this, as we talk here today, these issues are racial. They are economic. How many of them are tied to the American healthcare system and how bills get paid? In other words, we have employer-based insurance, but some people don't get that because they're not full-time workers or their employer doesn't offer it, as opposed to in Europe where everybody has healthcare because it's a right, not a privilege, and it's part of what the government provides. If we had a European system, would we be having this conversation?
I'd say we'd still be having the conversation. I think you have to look at healthcare disparities or health equity in two buckets. One is health disparities, where you have the burden of disease in certain populations, like, for example, diabetes. there's a higher prevalence of diabetes in the African American, Latino, and Native American populations. And then you have the healthcare disparity, where you're really looking at access and insurance coverage. So you can fix some insurance coverage as universal care, but you still have the incident of higher disease in communities and their social determinants of health that impact that. You were talking about data, and one of the things that we do in Novant Health is that we look at all of our data, all of our patient data, community data, using the health assessments from the health department as well, by something called Real Gaps, and that stands for looking at our data and segmenting it by race, ethnicity, language, gender, age, payer source, and sexual orientation, gender identity, so we can understand our patients. From that, as Gibby said, there's a strategic plan, but we are doing things in the community, like taking mobile units to the community. Instead of having everyone come to us, we're taking them there. We are making sure that we have, in the food deserts, have a food pantry, or taking food trucks to communities. So I think universal health care is one way to look at things, but it doesn't take care of some of the psychosocial needs that people have.
Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about this, but normally when I think the average person thinks about these inequities in healthcare, they do associate them with economic situations that people face. And perhaps they've learned over the course of the last several years that a lot of that is due to historical institutions that we put in place that keep people down and not able to get forward. And we do have this problem in Charlotte of people being born poor and dying poor with very little prospect for improving that situation in their lifetimes. But at Novant, you've also discovered that there are other communities that are having inequity problems, including the LGBTQ community.
Yes.
And others. What are those other communities, and why do they face these issues?
Well, you said, Carl, earlier, you have to look at all communities. The LGBTQ community is a community that's at high risk for healthcare disparities, because a lot of times they feel alienated and do not seek care. Persons with disabilities are also another community that may not come in for fear that they won't be understood. So there, we try to look at all of the communities and understand what their needs are. We have something in Novant Health called business resource groups, and they help us look at their team members in different populations, and they help us understand what are our patient needs, what are our team member needs, and how do we connect to the community. For example, during COVID, I would not have thought about this, and I'm glad that the Persons with Abilities BRG did, but we created Clear Mask, because what we found is that people who were hard of hearing or deaf or children had a hard time communicating if they couldn't see someone's mouth. So we have Clear Mask. So we really try to understand each population and meet their needs.
And we don't want to dwell on the past, but we have to understand the past.
Absolutely.
To figure out why we are where we are today. And I know one of the things, Carl, that Northeastern has recognized is that to be serious about addressing inequity, you have to teach students differently. What does that mean?
You know, President Ayun talks about cultural agility, preparing students to really lead in a global context, right? So our students go off across the world. They're in Europe, they're in Africa, they're in Asia, et cetera, and they lead. You really have to have cultural competency in order to do that. And part of it is making sure that they have opportunities to interact with students who are different, so that they can learn, mitigate those biases, and sort of through an experiential learning environment, be better prepared to lead as well. I think the other point that I do want to go back to an earlier point that was made, because you asked the question, what can we do? I think the mayor's racial impact imperative here in Charlotte is a brilliant move. And it's largely because whether the solutions are going to fully address it, address these issues, but what I want to address is the model. The model is a model of collective impact, where a big goal is established that is community-driven, community-led, or community-informed, and then the community works together through public-private partnerships to achieve those. Mm-hmm. So I'm an engineer, and so I think about sort of physics, and if you can point the vectors in the same direction and get multiple people working toward a common solution, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts in that regard.
And before we started this conversation, we were talking at the back of the room here, and you said you're an engineer, and as an engineer, you think this problem can be solved, because that's what engineers do, they solve problems. That's actually good to hear, because every time we've talked about this and gotten into the nitty-gritty of it all, it sounds impossible to solve.
Think about this building that we're in here at the, in the atrium. One could look at this and the complexity of this building, and yet there was a blueprint, there was a design, there were architects, there were engineers, there were worker constructors work, and we built this building, and we are here today because of that. Engineers love complexity, and this is a complex social problem that we have to address. The other thing that engineers really do is they have a systems thinking approach. In other words, one solution is not enough. You have to kind of look at the whole spectrum. We talked about the social determinants of health, whether it's housing and food and transportation and the like, economics and job access, et cetera. All those things are necessary to address these issues as well. And I think that in that sense, we start off with setting big goals. We work as a community to solve those goals. We co-create those solutions and move toward making small wins first and then building momentum to have institutional change.
Gibby, Carl just mentioned the mayor's racial equity initiative. I just spoke to the mayor about this. She's gung-ho on this. She calls this, she wants the city of Charlotte to set this, I'm going to quote her here, to set the standard as an American city, one which has achieved racial equity, social justice, and economic opportunity and upward mobility. $250 million is the goal. They've been raised $196 million of 250 from banks and other organizations, and I think the universities are involved in this and the
healthcare
hospitals are involved in this. Where are we in that effort?
At the beginning. Unfortunately, we were at the beginning when the plan was developed around the economic issues that we saw and the lack of economic mobility for our children in Mecklenburg County. So, you know, I agree. I think, number one, we do have to look at this systemically. You know, we're still creating barriers for people. We've got gentrification happening in Mecklenburg County. So instead of, and so we're building clinics in places where people are now, but they're getting pushed out, so they won't even have access to those clinics again. I mean, we've got to look at this broadly and figure out what are the things that we have to do and bite off pieces at a time and have the short wins, the quick wins, because that's what keeps people focused. And I think the big challenge with all of this is staying focused and thinking that we're in this for the long haul. Because if we're not in it for the long haul, we're going to keep doing what we've been doing for the last however many years we've been working on these issues.
The definition of insanity.
There you go.
I was going to say, I think that I always think about the path forward is upward. And it has lots of obstacles along the way, but mm-hmm. you keep moving forward. And I think about the Leading on Opportunity Task Force that really laid a foundation in Charlotte for where we need to be. And I have to mention someone very special at this moment, but Dr. Ophelia Garman Brown, who was the co-leader of that, passed away today. Mm-hmm. And I just think about it, I get chills thinking about her legacy and the amazing work that she did in Charlotte and for this entire community.
So I'm hoping that we can take that $250 million and build on that work mm-hmm. rather than reinventing the wheel. We have a bad habit of reinventing the wheel.
We have a lot of trust issues too in on this road toward equity and bias issues. And it's not just racial bias. We know that women who go to a physician are often not listened to because women they brush off their complaints. We know that African Americans sometimes are not listened to because they have some doctors believe that they just complain more than others. They're not really suffering more, and so they brush that off. That's cultural bias.
Absolutely.
And it leads to a lack of trust on the part of the patient. And we've seen that lack of trust play out during this pandemic in a number of different areas, from vaccine hesitancy to other areas as well. How do you start to rebuild that trust?
I think it's one person at a time. So for us at Novant Health, our experience has been that you have to go the extra mile to build that trust. There's a lot of dialogue that happens in Novant Health, whether it's about race, whether it's systemic racism, whether it's about generations in a workforce and how do we work with generations, whether it's about our own personal biases. We have system-wide conversations about that. And as I mentioned, the education that we do with all of our team members to really understand that. And when we recognize it, we really try to call it out and have dialogue about that.
Have the hospital systems in Charlotte, particularly Novant, since you can speak for them, have they learned anything about this issue because of the pandemic, particularly about reaching out to communities that don't necessarily trust the government or medicine?
Yes, we have. We were on the journey to pursuing health equity before the pandemic. And so, as you mentioned, everything just kind of rose to the top about all the disparities. And so it made us be even more committed to what we're doing. We were going out to communities more. We were partnering with churches or places of worship, schools, centers, community centers. We were partnering with everyone to really understand where we needed to be and actually advocating with our state and working with equitable distribution of the COVID vaccine.
A lot of problems with the vaccine are related, I think, to messaging, trust, issues of trust, but also mm-hmm. issues of messaging, which mm-hmm. gets back to how you speak to people and how you listen to people and what you hear them say. When we come back, I want to talk about how we communicate to underserved communities, and then talk about who the players in all this have to be, who has to lead mm-hmm. the charge if we want to eradicate some of these inequities that we've been talking about tonight with Carl Reed, Senior Vice Provost and Chief Inclusion Officer at Northeastern University, Tanya Blackman, Executive Vice President and Chief of Diversity, Inclusion and Equity at Novant Health, and Gibby Harris, Public Health Director at Mecklenburg County. We're coming right back. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about building equity in Charlotte's healthcare community from Northeastern University's campus in Charlotte at Trade and Tryon and one independent center. Gibby Harris is here. She's Public Health Director of Mecklenburg County. We know from this pandemic that communication has been a real problem. There are people who don't trust the government. They don't trust the vaccines. They don't trust doctors to tell them anything. A lot of vaccine hesitancy has been coming from and disinformation, and also people talking over other people's heads, not addressing their concerns, but instead focusing on what medical and government officials want the outcome to be. You have said, Gibby, that you've learned that you have to learn and understand what is important to the community, or you won't be successful in addressing what you think is most important. So if we want to move the needle, how do we do it?
Well, as we all talked about earlier, you have to start with listening. And you have to work with people where they are. One of the things that we've been fairly successful doing over the last months with vaccines is actually hiring individuals in the community, educating them, and then having them be the messenger and be the person that goes door to door talking to folks about the vaccine, answering their questions, making sure that they've got appropriate information to make their decisions and getting vaccinated, and then making the vaccine readily available to them. Those are things that they need. They don't have time to make an appointment at CVS Pharmacy and go stand in line to get their vaccine. They don't have time or the inclination to maybe listen to the experts around vaccines, and not at the level that a lot of those experts talk. So if we can do that with other things as well as vaccines, where we're actually in the community, listening to the community, understanding what their needs are, what their concerns are, and addressing those, then we're going to be more successful addressing the disparities that we've been talking about.
So, go ahead.
You want to? And that is so very, very powerful. I think there's one more word there, and it's to empower the community. And I think that there's something to be said about recognizing who are the grass tops and the grassroots leaders are in those communities. So our pastors, our bodega owners and others who really have influence in that community, and building relationships to them. And so what you talked about was building the going into the communities. Relationship is key, and building trust is fundamental, with an attitude around empowering the community to serve and to come up with those solutions.
Yeah. As we've said, a lot of the lack of trust is based on the inequities that are already existing, and a lot of the inequities were built in to the system deliberately over time by governments at many different levels. Does that mean that government has to take the lead on this, and are they prepared? Have you seen any indication that they are prepared to do so?
It has to be a both and. Mm-hmm. It really, or as President Obama says, an all of the above strategy. I think the government has to play a key role. I think private industry has to play a key role. I think the community-based organizations and the health institutions. Again, back to this whole notion of collective impact. We start off with a goal, we work together, and we bring the assets that each party brings to the solution in order to achieve that solution that everybody kind of can agree to. I think that's the key. It's not just the government, it's not just industry, it's not just the community, it's not just the institutions like Northeastern and others, it's all of the above. And working together to achieve a collective impact is the key to that solution.
Tanya, we have several initiatives toward that end underway in Charlotte right now, and we have two excellent hospital systems, and we are a relatively wealthy community, and you have said that we have the dollars, and we have the people, and we have the resources, and the late Dr. Ophelia Garman-Brown, who you referenced a moment ago, has asked the question is, do we have the will to do what we need to do? Mm-hmm. Do we?
I do believe that we have the will. I think we've seen a lot of that. We talked about Mayor Lyle's racial equity initiative. You know, the housing initiatives. We've done a lot of things in this community, and I think the key is going to be to continue that, to not feel like we've arrived because we've raised some money and we have an initiative that we've arrived. I think our path and our journey is going to be very long. I think about that we have to always keep in mind of our intention. I think when we keep in mind what we're intending to create, will keep us on the path, and we can never stop because the path doesn't end. The world is different. The world changes, people change, needs change, and I think we have to all work together to do this.
The pandemic, as bad as it was, provided us some opportunities. It opened a lot of people's eyes to things that have existed a long time that we simply did not see. And also, a lot of federal money has been flowing into communities, including this one across the country, to help toward COVID relief. And you have said, Gibby Harris, that shame on us if we don't take advantage of the opportunity, some of which can apply to these equity issues that we're talking about. Give us some examples of where the money has gone and where it ought to go if we want to make a difference in this area.
There have been quite a few initiatives focused on housing. You know, we've had issues with evictions and those sorts of things, so there's been money to try to stabilize families in the community during the pandemic. The manager, county manager, put together a COVID recovery task force that has developed a plan. And now we're looking at how we implement that plan with the dollars that have been made available by the federal government to address issues. Healthcare access is one of them. Housing is one of them. Jobs is one of them. I mean, there are a handful, and just health disparities in general. You know, the health disparities have been around forever, and the people who haven't recognized some of those are just aren't looking.
Okay.
But they haven't had a choice during COVID. It's been laid bare, as you mentioned earlier. And so this is, you know, the federal dollars are coming in. If we don't take advantage, this is a chance to jumpstart this and to really begin to make a difference. But you have to have a plan, as Carl mentioned. You have to know where you're going, and you have to know what you're going to be focused on. And so that, I think we're, as a community, getting there. And I think it's a positive move in the right direction. We just have to stay the course.
This problem is partly structural, it's partly educational, it's partly financial, and you point out, Carl, that these things have to be transformed in systems that have not only tolerated inequity, but have perpetrated inequity. What steps need to be taken?
I believe my fellow panelists have addressed a lot of the steps that need. First of all, listening is key and getting the community involved. One word we talked about building trust and building relationship. We talked about empowerment and empowering the communities. And by the way, there's no singular community, right? I mean, just like there's no singular Asian Americans. I mean, we are a mosaic. Our communities exist. But one word we haven't built in is accountability.
Yeah.
My pastor always said, most people will do the right thing for the right reason, but some people will only do the right thing for the wrong reason. And that is that there is accountability built into it. Mm-hmm. So I think that part of this also is to ensure that people's evaluations, their compensation, their elections, et cetera, are built into how well are they moving the needle in this regard as well. But I do believe setting a big goal, the community coming together to set a big goal, much like the racial impact initiative, setting a big goal, working toward achieving that goal, and holding people accountable to achieve that, I think is the way to go. It's been done with reducing childhood obesity, increasing college access in certain communities and other, cleaning up the water table in the Chesapeake Bay. These community-based public-private partnerships, solving complex social problems, that's the key way. And I think that there has to be a will and intentionality and a long-term view in all of this in order to achieve the success.
And you also say that we have to work proactively to be anti-racist, not just non-racist.
Yes, most people would say that they're non-racist, right? I think the sheer majority of the American populace would say they're non-racist. But what we know is that these are hundreds of years in the making. And so in order for us to have the impact we have to have to eradicate and dismantle racism, we have to be actively anti-racist, as Dr. Ibram Kendi talks about in his book. We have to be actively. Beverly Daniel Tatum, the former president of Spelman, used to say it like this: we're all moving along a moving sidewalk. And that moving sidewalk is moving us toward a kind of a racist system, as it were. Some people will move faster, right? Because they want to see the inequities continue. Some people will stop because they realize that the system is moving, but they're still moving. In order for you to be an anti-racist, you have to turn around and move against the move. And that's really what the anti-racism effort is. It's to actively work to dismantle the systems and the policies. And having conversations like this is the first important step.
So Gibby Harris, Carl Reed used the word accountability a couple of times in an earlier answer, and I want to talk about that now, because as we said before this program started, Charlotte loves its plans. We plan all the time, and they're beautiful plans, and they're thousands of pages long, and we read through them, we argue about them, and then sometimes they sit on the shelf never to be heard of again. Mm-hmm. Other times they get acted on. You said we have a lot of planning, but we seem to have a hard time with implementation, and we have a listener question here from our audience. We do have programs in place and plans in place. So how do we evaluate their progress toward the stated goals?
Well, when you put a plan together, it's not complete until you have measurable goals included in it. You need to know what you're measuring, and you need to put a system in place to be able to collect the information to tell whether you're meeting those goals.
And what about accountability? I mean, if the plans are there and we have these metrics to measure the progress, who takes the rap? Who gets the credit? Who takes the fall?
Well, here's the thing. We as a community need to hold ourselves and everybody that's working for us accountable. I, as the local public health director, need to be accountable, and I need to be called on the carpet if I'm not. Our elected officials need to be accountable, and if they're not measuring up, they need to be held, you know, they need to be called out as well. Anyone who's involved in that plan and has a role in it needs to be held accountable. And we as a community, I think, have the ability to ask the right questions, to say, where are we with this plan? Where have we moved? Are we moving forward with this, or is it just sitting on the shelf? So if we're not pushing, if we're not always pushing, it goes back to walking in the other direction. Yeah. You know, if we're not pushing all the time, then we're standing still at the very worst. So we all have to be accountable in some way or the other.
Tanya Blackman, I think you want to say something.
Yes, I do believe in accountability too, and I believe in having dashboards that are providing transparent information and reporting at regular intervals and deciding whatever that group is. In Novant Health, we report to our board, we report to our executive team, so our information is very transparent, and we have to stand up and talk about whether or not we're meeting goals for health equity. We have long-term goals that are related to health equity. And if we're not, then we have plans to achieve that.
And this is a country that likes to think very short-term, but this was a problem long in the making, and it will take a long time to get out. Mm-hmm. How will we know where we are on the path, and how will we know when we've arrived?
Yeah. I think when I think about that, I think about equity and the definition of equity, and that is really making sure that each person has the appropriate access to opportunities and resources to have their better quality of life. And when we can say yes to that for each person, then I think we may have arrived.
Well, who keeps the yardstick? Who decides on what the yardstick is, what the metrics are? Is it the government? Is it the health department? Is it the hospital system?
I think it's a collaborative effort. I think that we all have to come up with, and the community. I think when we're showing data and holding ourselves accountable, we should be able to show that to the community. We'd say, this is what we heard. This is what we agreed that we wanted to do in this community to improve the health of our communities. That's Novant Health's mission, one person at a time. How are we doing? And if we're not there, we need to find plans or interventions to get there.
And I think we've talked about key words tonight. Transparency is a huge word. And it's a matter of putting the information out there. But we've also got to understand we put plans in place, and we put forward what we think are best practices in those plans, but we may try something and it may not work. And we need to be willing to admit that it didn't work and look at what we need to do to change it to make it work.
You're talking about the scientific method, Gibby Harris, which people have trouble with. Gibby Harris is public health director of Mecklenburg County. Tanya Blackman is the executive vice president and chief of diversity, inclusion, and equity at Novant Health. And Carl Reed, senior vice provost and chief inclusion officer at Northeastern University. They co-produced and co-hosted this conversation, and we thank you for letting us onto your campus for it. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.